Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Hey. Hey, Ben. It's a wonderful day in Hawaii. It's a little cold, and it's a little windy, and it's going to get windier. But what's up with this? We've got two Europeans at the top of the leaderboard with Scottie Scheffler, and Rory McIlroy is, like, tied for 64th. We've got some strange things going on at AT&T Pebble Beach this weekend. Of course, they're only playing on Pebble. No Spyglass. Beautiful course, though, over the weekend. World number one, Scottie Scheffler, newcomer Ludvig Åberg, sharing the lead going into the weekend with Thomas Detry. It's really cool. The new format is in this what is now a signature event. That's another $20 million out there, a purse to go for. It's fun. It's fun. And somebody said Ludvig Åberg was like Tiger Woods when he started on tour. And Justin Thomas is quietly moving up into contention. Isn't this exciting? Well, guess who's going to be on the show with me this morning? I can't wait to talk to him. So let's introduce him, get to take care of our sponsors. Mark Rolfing is joining us, golf analyst and golf commentator, Golf Channel and NBC Sports, after this.
The Golf Club is brought to you by Pro Camera Hawaii. Quality cameras to capture the memories. Now in the Pro Kai Shopping Center. Aloha Power Equipment, your landscape superstore. Weed it, whack it, mow it, blow it. We put power at your fingertips. The Honolulu Sign Company, branding banks, shopping centers, businesses, and hotels since 1939. Claude Brousseau, master teaching professional at the Wailea Golf Academy. The Aloha Section PGA, teach your children to play golf, the gift that lasts forever.
And thank you so much. Mark Rolfing is golf analyst and commentator for Golf Channel and NBC Sports. He's a member of the Hawaii Golf Hall of Fame, 2012 PGA Distinguished Service Award recipient with his wife, Debbie, and contributor to the Dad's Advice Project. Welcome into the clubhouse, Mark.
Well, good morning, Danielle. And you are spot on about Pebble Beach. It's going to be a very, very interesting weekend. You know, you've got a great leaderboard at the top. A lot of Europeans, as you said, Rory McIlroy at the bottom. That's no surprise to me because he's all wrapped up in this whole new PGA Tour investment plan. And I think he's really struggling with his role in it. And it doesn't surprise me at all that it's affected his game. But when I look at Pebble Beach this weekend, this is the first real test in my mind of the PGA Tour's new model, because the first signature event of the year was Century. Now, that event has always been a limited field event. You had qualifying standards to get in, and it was not a full field event. This event, which used to be the Crosby Clambake, for years and years was a full field event. And today, on Saturday, it was all about the celebrities. It was all about Bill Murray. It was all about entertaining the fans and doing all that. That's all gone away now. What they've done is created a $20 million extravaganza for 80 players. For those 80 players, that's a really, really good deal. For the fans, is it going to be? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how the fans react to it. I don't think the bad weather in Pebble Beach is going to help, but it's going to be an interesting test. And this is the direction the PGA Tour has decided to go. Is it going to work? To me, that's a big question.
Oh, that's interesting, because I hear you saying is that we should have a fun event. You know, we should have all the celebrities and all the shenanigans that goes on with the celebrities while the guys are grinding along trying to win.
You know, we should have some variation in what we do. I don't necessarily think that playing for more and more money is what is going to be appealing to the fans. What is in it for the fans to get them motivated to watch very rich guys play for even more money? I don't know. The television ratings for the tournaments this year thus far have not been good. They've been flat. In fact, the Century ratings were quite disappointing to me.
Wow.
I thought they would be considerably higher than they were, and they weren't. Now, there's other factors at this time of year. There's football, and there's weather, and all kinds of stuff. But the fact is, golf at the highest level is really in a total sort of state of disarray right now, and I'm just not sure the fans know what to do. You look at that LIV leaderboard, and you see some of the names on there now, including John Rahm. I'm sure the fans are torn now as to really what they're going to be interested in this weekend. And I don't think this whole split, this divide, is going to turn out well unless we solve it.
Well, I have a problem with LIV because I think it's a 54-hole party. And it's really relaxed. There's not a lot of stress involved. Sure, they've always played in competitive mode, but it just doesn't feel the same competition. So does that make it fun? Is that why we're trying to do away with fun things on the PGA Tour, to be more competitive while they're over there having fun? I'm trying to understand what they're trying to get at, you know, but I have a problem with LIV.
Yep, I do too. I'm with you on that one. But here's what they do have, Danielle. They have all the scoundrels. They took away from the PGA Tour all the villains, all the bad guys, all the troublemakers. There is a faction of sports fans that loves that aspect of
yes.
sports competition.
Yes.
Golf has always had difficulty creating a rooting interest because how do you root against Rory McIlroy? Or how do you root against Justin Rose or you just Louis Aubert? You just don't do that. So golf now has all the bad guys over on LIV, and I think the PGA Tour is going to miss them. I think we miss Bryson DeChambeau. I really do. Even though the PGA Tour got all this money this week from this investment group out of Boston, you know, it doesn't do anything. In fact, I think it fractures the game even more. And no matter how much money there is, if we don't have unification, if we don't have one umbrella overseeing, you know, golf at the highest level, this isn't going to work.
Right. Rory will go to LIV.
Well, take a look. That, you know, I'll tell you what, that is not the farthest thing from my mind right now. Rory has gone from hating LIV, absolutely hating it a year ago, to feeling like when they announced the partnership with LIV that he had the rug pulled out from under him. He was the guy that represented the PGA Tour and represented everything against LIV. And then they turned his back on him, so he got all upset about that. And now he's even saying to the point where he feels like there has to be a LIV deal done. He and Jordan Spieth do not see eye to eye on this at all, and Spieth is on the policy board. SI reported this morning that they had a one-hour conversation on the phone this week because Rory was unhappy with what Jordan was saying. Jordan was saying, now we don't need to necessarily do a deal with the Saudis because we've already got our money from another group. Well, Rory is correct in that that does not solve the big divide.
That's right.
It gets the PGA Tour guys more money, but it doesn't solve the problem. Unification is the problem. That's where we need to be headed.
Yes. Yeah, if we're struggling to compete against the NFL, we should really have a combined force here. Let's dive into this, the splitting from a not-for-profit and adding we're not splitting, well, we're kind of making the PGA Tour a not-for-profit and for-profit entity. Can you give us some information about how that's going to work?
Yeah, so how that's going to work, Danielle, the PGA Tour has always been a not-for-profit, and it's going to continue to be a not-for-profit. What is going to happen is a new entity is going to be formed. It's called PGA Tour Enterprises. And that is going to be a totally different body. And the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour are going to put all their assets into this new for-profit venture called PGA Tour Enterprises. The value of that right now, they're saying, is going to be about $12 billion. So the group out of Boston that put up $3 billion is going to get some minority share in that. That would be the fund that the Saudis put the PIF money in if, in fact, that deal happens. That is not going to affect the PGA Tour as a not-for-profit. There's two things to it, though, that I don't like. The first one is it weakens the PGA Tour's financial position because all their assets have gone into a new pool. And what they're going to start doing is asking the various tournaments to pony up more money, like Sony, who's going to have to pay more part of the purse, Sony is going to. Or the tournament operations are going to have to give a part of their budget to the tour to support the event. There are some tournaments that aren't able to do that, and all it's going to do is take money away from charity. So I do have a problem with that. The other issue is, how are you going to decide this whole schedule based on what are signature events and what aren't signature events? You know, this year it's Pebble Beach is a signature event. Will that always be the case? I don't know. Mm. I think this uncertainty about the signature events is going to be an issue. Look, the money that's going into this PGA Tour Enterprises primarily is going to be used to benefit the players that stood loyal to the PGA Tour. They're also going to pay money out to players that made the PGA Tour what it is today that didn't get compensated. And I know because Lee Trevino is staying for the next 2 weeks in a condo next to me here at Kapalua. We're talking about it every day. He's going to have a chance now to get some money out of this deal from PGA Tour Enterprises that he wouldn't have otherwise made. And that is a very attractive thing. I believe the reason they did this, Danielle, is that's what's going to separate the guys from Liv. I don't think they'll be able to take part in this new money in PGA Tour Enterprises. They might be able to come back and play in some tournaments, but they won't get a share of that money because they went and got their money somewhere else, and that somewhere else was Liv Golf.
Right. Yeah, the $60 million just to come over to this side of the fence. Right. Or whatever the number was. Okay. But in addition to this not-for-profit and this for-profit arm, bringing all these players together, and I mean the list of guys who are involved in putting this all to Andrew Cohen, Chief Investment Officer and co-founder of Cohen Private Ventures, Vice Chairman, New York Mets. I mean, that's the kind of list we've got going here, folks who brought this money to the table. But we've also got the players becoming partners. The players have now opportunities to join as in the partnership with the strategic sports group. How does that work?
Yeah, the way that works is the players are actually going to get equity in PGA Tour Enterprises. They are going that for-profit entity is going to be owned by the players, effectively. That's how they're going to get their money. They won't get it all up front, but they'll get it over a period of time.
Well, that makes sense to me. You know, these guys are the ones who are, they're not employees. They have a stake. When they have a stake in something, then they'll stick with it. They'll work hard. They already do, I know. But they'll stay with it. I think that part of this I really like. That's the part I like. That's it.
Yeah, I like that too. I feel like everything now, though, is about money for a couple hundred guys. And I just spent the majority of my week working on junior golf and junior golf issues here in Hawaii and tournament schedules. And the fact is our golf courses are so busy now that it's getting more and more difficult, you know, for owners of golf courses and managers to provide access to people that need help at affordable rates because they can get their high rates, particularly on the weekends. Well, if we really want to grow the game, we should be spending our money subsidizing green fees for people that can't afford it in public golf, particularly the kids.
Yeah.
Instead of raising purses from $15 million to $20 million, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
I don't know if we really want to grow the game. So I just think this is all about money. And the sooner we can solve it, the more chance we're going to have of keeping the fans because we're losing the fans.
I have to share something with you that I thought was so funny. Meg McLaren tweeted, and there's a video going on of a person kind of dashing through the shoreline wash, a person chasing around the sand with a squeegee, and the surf keeps...
Yeah.
And she says, me, the person in the video, me wondering whether to tweet about money in pro golf versus money in pro golf outside of Live and PGA Tour, or money in pro golf versus money in the women's game, or money in pro golf versus money in the actual global grassroots sport of the golf, or money in pro golf versus what the fans want. Boy, was that spot on?
Yeah, it was really spot on. If you take a look at who we're trying to take care of here, the fans are too far down the list. You know, all of this work is being done, you know, to make, again, I would say before, it's an oversimplification, but we're trying to make rich guys richer. You know, the sponsors are too far down the list. The fans are way too far down the list. I mean, how do we make the fans happy? We have to remember, Danielle, you and I love this game dearly, but we are a part of a very small group of golf fans. You look at the NFL and the 50 million people that are watching these football games the last couple of weeks, and compare it to the 500,000 people that are watching golf. That's that's a dramatic difference. You know, we have a very small niche market, niche sport, and if we lose the fans in that sport, whether it's because we've got two tours going on, or, you know, we're not televising, or some of our tournaments like Live are a joke, none of that is good. None of that's going to help us.
No, and absolutely. But the reason I became such a fan of golf is my dad. My dad would go out every Saturday and play with the boys, you know, and I just wanted to go too. I wanted to go, and I couldn't because, you know, they sat in their golf carts and drank. And played golf and had a wonderful time. But that always seemed so magical to me, somehow very romantic, you know, the guys getting together in their golf carts. And those are the fans, too. And the kids are the fans. And to cut them out of being able to use a little tiny portion of the golf course so that we can help grow the game, get them excited. It's a great game. You learn so much about being honest and a good friend. There's just so much value in this game that seems to be getting lost in the transactions that keep getting announced, you know, allowing for a co-investment from the public investment fund, PIF, in the future, subject to all the necessary, here's the line, subject to all necessary regulatory approvals. So all of this has, you know, it's not even started. They have to get regulatory approval.
Right. You know, the Justice Department is going to have something to say about this. Now, if PIF and the PIF money comes in and it forces LIV Golf to change, to either become part of PGA Tour Enterprises, change their formats or whatever, to me, that'll be a good thing. I hope there is a deal done because, frankly, look at what happened yesterday, Danielle. Joaquin Niemann shot 59 on the LIV Tour.
Yeah.
We don't have any idea whether or not that was a really good round or whether it was a joke because the whole format's a joke. But if you take a look at strokes gained, which is a pure test now against the rest of the field, if you look at what Joaquin Niemann did yesterday, he had the second best strokes gained round of any round on any tour since 2004, literally
wow.
In 20 years. People don't have any way to judge whether that was any good yesterday or not because it's on, you know, a format that's a joke. That's got to change if stars like Joaquin Niemann are going to play over there. If the tour's going to go away, the LIV Golf Tour, then fine. But if it's going to exist, we should force it to change and force it to become part of an overall umbrella with the PGA Tour.
I think it would be great having everybody. Why did the guys decide to leave the PGA Tour to begin with? Why? Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, what made them want to do this thing? The money?
Look, there's two different reasons for Phil and Brooks. Phil needed the money.
Okay.
He needed the money for a variety of reasons. All you have to do is read the Billy Walters book, and you'll see why Phil needed the money. Okay, $200 million is a lot of money. Brooks, on the other hand, felt like his best chance to win more major championships was to play less golf, and he doesn't like regular PGA Tour events anyway. He's never done very well in regular events, and he's won five majors. The fact is, that's why he went, and it worked.
Wow.
He won the PGA Championship. So I think guys went for different reasons. Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Graham McDowell, the washed-up competitive Europeans, got a new lease on life. They couldn't have beaten anybody going forward on the PGA Tour, but they had a second life. You know, they're not 50 years old yet, so they can't cash in on the senior tour. So what LIV did for a number of guys is provide this place to make a lot of money for players that are in their 40s, not their 50s, their 40s. That's those guys.
And what's in it for the Saudis?
I think really what's in it is this whole sports washing concept. You can say what you want about whether or not they're sports washing by buying, you know, Premier Club soccer teams or Formula One teams or all that. But the fact is, we are not talking about the atrocities that are going on in Saudi Arabia nearly as much as we did 2 years ago. We are talking about LIV Golf. That's what they wanted. It worked.
It's a distraction.
It's a distraction is exactly right.
My, oh my, you know, and as I look through the, you know, co-founder of Home Depot, principal Fenway Sports Group, President Fenway Sports Group, President Boston Red Sox. Just say these are some power brokers who are behind this for-profit entity that the PGA Tour is putting together. And with that kind, that's a lot of power, wouldn't you say?
I would say. I'll tell you this. Give you a little preview of what's to come. That I think is going to be important, Danielle, because you know me pretty well. In 3 weeks, we have the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Florida, and it is a signature event, $20 million purses. It's the new model. The two guys that are going to be on Golf Central live from the Arnold Palmer Invitational are Mark Rolfing and Brandel Chambly. Now, I think you will hear a lot more discussion from those two about the whole LIV Golf scene and the whole, Boston Investment Group and all that, probably than you're hearing even from Paul McGinley and Johnson Wagner this week in Pebble Beach.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be a different week. We're going to have 3 weeks until then to figure out whether or not Pebble Beach worked. And I think you're going to hear a lot. So keep your eye on Golf Central from Bay Hill.
Absolutely, always. Always. Now, final question. Has anybody asked Jack Nicklaus what he thinks about all of this?
Yeah, I think Jack Nicklaus has been asked. He is basically on the unification bandwagon right now.
Okay.
Jack's a tennis player. He loves tennis. Always has. That was his second hobby. But he feels like golf is going the direction tennis is. In tennis now, if you look at the four major championships, they're great. The U.S. Open, Wimbledon, French Open, Australian Open.
Right.
But any of the other tournaments don't matter. You don't know which players are playing where.
Right.
You know,
it's true.
They're all over the world playing. And Jack is worried that golf is headed in that direction. And I'm not sure he's wrong about that.
So Brooks Koepka, you know, he leaves PGA Tour because all he wants to do is play less golf and play in the majors.
I'm not sure we should allow him to do that.
I don't either.
If you want to take advantage and reap the rewards of all this, you've got to pitch in and be part of a team that's going to create the best possible product for the fans, for TV, for the media, for everything. You can't be kind of a lone wolf out on your own.
Yeah.
This has got to be a group effort.
Yeah, it can't be all about me. Wow. No. Mark Rolfing, thanks so much for spending so much time with us. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Danielle. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Mark Rolfing, golf analyst and golf commentator for Golf Channel and NBC Sports, member Hawaii Golf Hall of Fame. We're coming back. We got John Peter Hagan. He's right in the midst of Pebble Beach right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
No high fives for me,
I want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun. Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
The Aloha Power Equipment Superstore is next to the Costco gas station in Ivalay. Riding mowers, robotic mowers, weed whackers, blowers, chainsaws, and generators. We got it all. Specials throughout the store. We stock parts and accessories for everything we sell. Honda, Maruyama, Steel, Echo, Billy Goat, and a lounge for while you wait repairs. Our Waipahu store is still open. We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment Superstore.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box, see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come, join the aloha at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
The golf club tip number 81. Don't throw your bag in the pond. You'll want your car keys and wallet when driving home. Now, back to the golf club with Danielle Tucker.
Hey, okay, I think it's important for me to tell you that we've got a high surf advisory for the west-facing shores of Maui. Got a high surf warning for north and east-facing shores of Niihau, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and Maui. And do not take it for granted. You know, it may seem calm, but underneath that wave action, there is a roiling creature that's going to pull you in. So just, you know, watch it from afar, unless you are an expert. We've got mostly sunny skies to look forward to. Windy conditions, isolated showers windward of Mauka. High between 72 and 77, depending on where you are. Trade winds 15 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 50 miles per hour. And tonight, partly cloudy, windy, windward of Mauka. Scattered showers in the evening, numerous showers after midnight. Leeward side, isolated showers. The lows 62 to 67. Put those blankets on. Wasn't that nice last night? Trade winds 15 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 50 miles per hour. And it goes on like that, okay, until the wind advisory, wind warning ends, and that is Sunday evening, and that goes until about 6 o'clock p.m. So it could, you know, it could go down. It could stay strong. We just have to be ready for it. John Peter Hagan, author, a real estate developer and architect, a member of Hazeltine, an apartment in Paris, and a few rounds under his belt on the Albatross, Le Golf National, and projects around the world. His mission became securing the St. Andrews Old Course Starters Box for development in California through an auction on September 10, back in 2001. Welcome into the clubhouse, John.
Good morning. Good morning. You're reading the weather report for Hawaii. You could double it for California, and particularly Pebble Beach, because we have high surf. We've got storms coming. It's classic winter California weather.
And what are the winds coming at us at?
Well, they're coming out of the southwest. They call it the Pineapple Express.
Uh-huh.
It starts Uh-huh. That word, the same one that you're used to hearing and reading about and commenting on. And today it's going to be rain all day, and tonight it's going to get ugly and stay ugly through the weekend, through tomorrow. So it's going to be an interesting golf tournament from the weather point of view, but also from the issue that you and Mark were so succinctly discussing in this trade-off between what's going on in golf, what's going on in Saudi Arabia, and how is affecting the local climate. And I can tell you here in Pebble Beach that it's already you can sense the fact that it has nothing to do with the community, this golf tournament. It's not a tech, what about galleries? It's not about anything but the television product and getting the top players here and stealing them from the rest of the golf tournaments around the country that people traditionally go to. And the public, and particularly the volunteers, have had it. I was on the course Wednesday and Thursday, and partially Friday yesterday. And somebody said, why should I rake a bunker in the rain and the wind so some guy that I've never heard of can take $3.5 million out of our economy? And if you strip it to the bare bones, it's the volunteers who are doing all the work for nothing who aren't being compensated, and they are.
You know, and the whole thing was compensation went to charities in the community. That's why people volunteer, right? Because they want to put on the tournament and make money for the charities.
That's true. And the kids that are here that are driving golf carts and shuffling people are happy to do it, of course, because they get out of school for a week and they get credit, academic credit for dealing with the community and the charities and everything else. But at the end of the day, you've got the elderly people and the retired people who probably haven't made $3.6 billion combined in their lifetime.
Right.
And they're saying, why should we do this?
Right, right. Yeah. Because it is, you know, the question is, what's the focus anymore? And, of course, the question answered is money. And you know, we don't talk about it when it's football players making a gazillion dollars for whatever, but because, you know, they have strong charity factors as well. The NFL, the NBA, they're very giving, and golf has always been very giving. So we have to keep that alive. Otherwise, you know, what's the point?
Well, I have news. It's not news. Golf contributes more to local charities than the NFL, Major League Baseball, and professional basketball do combined.
Wow. See?
yep. $16 million last year was distributed to the various charities of the three counties of Central California. It's an awful lot of money, and it really does good, but as Mark started to discuss, who is losing out on this? It's the kids that can't afford to play golf. Right now, the Peter Hay course, the little three par that Pebble redid, it costs you $65 to play it. And if you're 12 years old, you don't have $65.
Wow.
Yeah. It's you'll see parents stopping there early in the morning before they really open, and will play a few holes or putt for 15, 20 minutes and then take their kids and drop them off at school and they go to work. But it's ridiculous. And if you want to go get a quesadilla or a Coke or something, that's probably $5, $6. They have totally upturned the good work that Mark and the rest of the professionals in the world of golf started with First Tee and everything else that went along with it.
Can I just switch, because I'm really curious why you became so fascinated by the St. Andrews Old Course Starters Box.
It was very simple in that golf has, or let me put it another way, there's not a stadium or a venue that's sacrosanct and for football or baseball. Yes, Yankee Stadium, but that's for a team. The Boston Garden, yes, for the Celtics. But golf doesn't have that. And golf has always been a one way or another, the common man and the elite man who get together, play, have a good time, enjoy each other's company, help each other out with their golf games or other things in life, caddies included. And everyone who lives and has ever held a golf club in their hand wants to go to St. Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
That means Jack Nicklaus, you, me, Mark Rolfing.
It's a great equalizer.
Collector in Paris.
Yeah.
You all go there and everybody, that's the focus point. That's the holy grail for the game because it's been there 650 years. But everybody checked in at that box and paid their fees.
So you wanted?
They were going to destroy it. They were going to destroy it, and I said you can't do that.
Oh, why destroy it? That doesn't sound British at all.
Well, that's true, but the R&A clubhouse, which is right next to it, needed a new roof. And yeah, it's in one way or another, it's always the dollar bill, isn't it?
Yes.
And they thought that their plumbing lines that ran out into the North Sea on the beach that was made famous by Chariots of Fire. They thought they ran under the first tee and part of the first hole and certainly under the Old Course starter's box. So what are we going to do with this box? We'll get rid of it. I said, no, no, no. And they wound up putting it up for auction and I won the auction.
Yay! They figured a way to make money out of it.
Yeah, that was my give back.
So,
and then the thing that's funny because the box cost me $55,000 to buy at auction in this international auction that was done at the beginning of the internet when we had dial up.
Yes,
everything else. And the guy that finishes last this week in this tournament, which is a no cut tournament, last place pays $32,000.
Oh, well, okay, though.
I think my 50,000 plus investment has a lot more money for the world of golf than the 32 that's going to him.
So tell me, where is it now?
We put it on a ship. We took it apart, put it on a ship, brought it through the Panama Canal, and it was to be installed on a golf course called the Hideaway in La Quinta, California, the Palm Springs area.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the box got here, as you alluded to at the beginning, the auction happened to be on 9/11.
Yeah. Okay.
And so all of a sudden there was a gray cloud and it continued. By the time we got the box here in the middle of December, the course where it was going to go was into receivership.
Yeah.
So the feds took the box and all the parts of it, and they locked it up in a barn in the desert. And while they were going through all the legal manifestations and whatever, all the subcontractors in the valley who hadn't been paid because of the improprieties on the part of the developer who went to federal prison over this thing, they broke into the barn and started stealing parts of the box because they knew it had some value somewhere.
Wow.
And, yeah. So it was a mess. And it's still a lingering mess. I still, 12 years later, get phone calls saying, where's the box? We're going to Palm Springs to play golf. We got to go get our picture taken. We were in St. Andrews 20 years ago, and we had our picture taken. Now we got to do it again
with
a palm
box
tree in the background.
So that was Play Away Please, the tale of the sale of golf's greatest icon, the St. Andrews.
So Random House found me, yes, and we built a book around the whole thing. It's really, it's not about me. It's the biography of a building.
So, and what about Pebble Beach and Other Chance Encounters? Did you finish that one?
It is about ready to go to galley, and we hope, finally, that it has a chance of getting out for Christmas time release this year.
That would be fantastic. Yeah.
It would be another miracle.
Yes. So you're not at Pebble today for the very serious side of golf, the competitors?
I am here, and I have one little anecdote. And by the way, the crowds are very, very low.
Thin, it's called thin.
Thin, weak. Weather has something to do with it, of course.
Yes.
But, you know, people come to see Bill Murray or Jack Lemmon or Johnny Weissmuller, who played Tarzan,
right,
have him sitting up in a tree looking for his golf ball. You know, they may not have it enough to actually see Murray, but there's the perception there.
Right.
And it's an event, and that's gone. That's totally gone.
But
Wednesday, I'll tell you about my weather story of the week.
Okay.
Finau on Wednesday was on the seventh hole, and it was howling, the wind. Hole was playing 112 yards. He hit a driver and got it on the green.
What? 112 yards is like nothing, right? But he needed a driver.
Yeah, they said his ball speed was 164, and he got it on the green. It was aced, actually, in the California Open many years ago with a 2-iron a player. But 112 yards.
So
that's called into the teeth.
Into the teeth. Yes. Okay. So that's what they're playing. So we've got Thomas Detry and Ludvig Åberg and Scottie Scheffler 11 under. How often do we see two Europeans at the top of the leaderboard at a U.S. event?
Well, about as often as just have a Frenchman win one.
Right.
As Mark was saying, it's truly a universal sport.
Yes.
It hasn't, there's always been the Asian impact and the European impact, but I would venture at one level of golf or another, there's probably a tournament going on in every continent on the planet, including India. You know, there might not be anybody there, but I have news for you. There's nobody in Pebble Beach either.
Thomas Detry, Ludvig Åberg, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Justin Thomas, Emilio Griot, Matthew Pavon, Keegan Bradley, Bo Hostler, Colin Morikawa, all at the top of the leaderboard, 7-under Morikawa. So we're watching this one in the comfort of a no-rain situation. We're in our homes watching. It's going to probably be where most of the people around Pebble Beach are going to be watching, too. John Peter Hagen. Yes, John Peter Hagen, thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us and sharing all those great stories.
Well, I always enjoy contributing and play it. Have a good round this afternoon.
Have a good round. Aloha.
Aloha.
We're going to come back. Stephen Yen, executive chef, director of food and beverage, Liberty National Country Club. Liberty National. Right there, Statue of Liberty's there. He's with us right after now. She's not going to be with us. He is going to be with us after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, 21724 Hart Street off White Camilo Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliance signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Got a shutterbug in your life? ProCamera Hawaii has just what you need. ProCamera has lots of holiday specials for you. Your authorized Canon, Sony, Fujifilm, Nikon, and Ricoh dealer. With in-stock and special order for your hard-to-find items. ProCamera Hawaii, we know cameras. From digital cameras, lenses, audio, lighting, video accessories, and gift certificates. ProCamera Hawaii has it all. Now at Pearl Kai Shopping Center. Capture the memories.
Oh, let's have a contest. Yes, we want the ninth caller. You can't have one in the last 6 months. We have to give everybody a chance. So you can win two rounds of golf at Poipu Bay. That's right. All you have to do is call 808-545-1111. We don't take your name and address and send you a bunch of stuff except for the Poipu Bay gift certificates that you could win by being the ninth caller at 808-545-1111.
Poipu Bay on Kauai, South Shore. Share our home with need a gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay golf gift certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle. Got my new book, Three Tips to Play Better Golf. Practice, practice, practice. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Stephen Yen, Executive Chef, Director of Food and Beverage, Liberty National Country Club. Welcome into the clubhouse.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's really something, you know. Diana DeLucia introduced us, and from restaurant chef to commanding a private club kitchen is not without forks in the road. I rather like the way she wrote the following the path to private club chefdom. What was it like going through the process of getting to become the Stephen Yen Executive Chef, Director of Food and Beverage, Liberty National Country Club?
I think it was, well, first and foremost, I grew up playing golf, so it's not like the golf world was foreign to me. After becoming a, you know, first becoming a cook and then ultimately becoming a chef, I one day knew that I was going to transition over into the private club world. It was just a matter of time when. And what I think I did well was I spent a lot of time in various cuisines and various styles of food in New York City. So it came to a point where there's almost nothing that myself and my team can't cook. So if somebody wanted brown rice sushi, we say, go play nine. I got to make the rice. If you know, somebody wanted to pound it out veal Milanese, we said, just give me about 20 minutes. I'll make it happen, even if it's not on the menu. You know, you get a lot of special requests, but being able to say no is, I think, you know, part of our job, where a lot of our membership is, you know, of course, you're eating in New York City at least 3-4 times a week. A lot of these guys and girls are eating in restaurants around the world that either I don't even have access to or can't afford. So they know what they want, and they're all foodies. Being able to just bounce ideas back and forth and say, hey, what do you feel like eating after this round? And letting them say, hey, you know what? It's in your court. The ball's in your side of the court. I just want a couple apps, maybe a pasta course, give me a steak course, make sure there's a fish in there. And then inside the kitchen between myself and my sous chef, it's a little more fun than just your average, you know, what people thought of country club food in the 80s and 90s, of your filet mignon with your palm puree and, you know, a couple carrots on the side and some Hunter's gravy.
Don't forget the potato.
Oh, yeah, yeah. definitely the potatoes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's come to a whole new level, and I think it's happening across the world, where you're having more and more restaurant chefs take the leap and enter into the golf world, or, you know, the country club world, the private club world, yachts and such. I've become very close with the TPC chefs because of our affiliation with the PGA Tour. And it's fun to see some of the chefs play golf themselves. Some of the chefs have never even swung a club. They have no idea what's going on, you know, during tournaments, but yet they're putting out, you know, high-end food. And I think, you know, especially in New York City, the chef de cuisine of Per Se, he's now a sandwich in Connecticut. And you had the chef from Delmonico's, which is one of the oldest restaurants, not only in New York City, but in the world. They created the term 86. You know, when you run out of something, he's now at Hudson National. So you have these chefs that are making the leap from you know, high volume or a high level of cuisine into the club world. And really, for us, the greatest thing about it is it's a quality of life. Previous to my current job, our kitchen didn't close until 2 a.m. So you had, you know, you were getting home. If, you know, obviously the exec chef's not staying until 2 a.m, but there are nights you're there very, very late. So it's a totally different world from what we're now used to in the club world where, you know, during the wintertime, we're in Jersey City. So we pretty much shut down for the entire winter where we decommission, we turn the gas off, turn off all of the refrigeration. You know, some of the golfers head south to teach or in Arizona. And it's a much better quality of life. And especially, like, I have a 2-year-old daughter now, so it allows me to spend more time with her versus a regular restaurant in New York City being a high volume. You're never going to really get to do that. And I think one of the biggest things when I was a young cook, I read an article. The chef's name's Alex Lee. He was like the number 2 guy at Danielle, and he made it switch over to clubs, and he was saying, listen, I had kids. I didn't want to be that dad who never saw his kids. I want to be able to raise my kids. So I moved into the club, private club world, and it allowed me to do so. And so, you know, after reading that article, I was like, listen, I'm going to follow this guy's path because he knows what he's doing. He's really good at what he does, and he just proves that it can be done. So that's really helped. Having a lot of mini mentors helped along the way is, especially just being able to sit back and say, how do clubs do it now? I know how the clubs did it in the 90s, but how do they do it now? You know, there was a guy who ran Wingfoot, and there was an article, I think Diana wrote about him, and it was about on, like, Thursday night, they would have pork belly ramen. And that's something where you never even dreamed of having 10 years ago, 15 years ago in a country club or a golf club or any type of club. Like, you thought about club sandwiches. You thought about, like I said, filet mignon. You thought about shrimp, you know, shrimp cocktail. And those are the items that you normally thought about. And even growing up, going to clubs, like I played high school golf. I was a captain of the Farsi golf team, but I wasn't good enough to play college. But being exposed to clubs and eating at clubs, I knew the food was never, you know, it wasn't something where you really wanted to go. It was more of everyone's like, hey, we have a minimum spend. We have to go eat at clubs. And it was kind of like a forced thing to do. But now it's more of you see a lot of the members rather go to the club because they're not bothered about waiting for a table, trying to get a reservation. If they want to entertain clientele, they can do so in their own home court advantage. You know, they can bring their own wines if we don't have the wine that they exactly want for their clients. They can make the menu exactly the way they want the menu to be. Any allergies that their clientele will be met with smiles versus, you know, a young server just saying, I'll alert the kitchen, and then might not happen.
Right. You know? Yes, exactly. Let me ask you a quick, how did you get into golf?
I think growing up, my dad, he always played tennis. And then in the late 80s, you know, when McEnroe and all those guys were popular, that's when golf really started taking off for my family. I don't know about anyone else, but my father and my uncle started playing, and they're like, hey, we can transition from tennis to golf pretty well. It's a lot of hand-eye coordination, you know, where they got very good fast. So at the age of 10 years old, I started taking lessons with, his name is Michael Hebron. He was top 50 teacher in the country. He was out of Smithtown Landing in Long Island. And then I was getting really good. I still have pictures. My left elbow never broke on my backswing. So my dad sent me to Bradenton, to the Ledbetter Golf Academy, before it was IMG. And it was every time I had a school break, I would be down in, like, Bradenton. And then during the winter, we would travel on the junior tour and, you know, do some HAGA tournaments. So it was, you know, his focus for me was to become a professional golfer. Obviously, that didn't happen. And now being the executive chef and F&B director at one of the premier clubs in the world, I actually think it's a better role than being a professional golfer because there's, in my opinion, it's a lot easier to cook than it is to be a professional golfer, you know?
Yes, but, you know, that's not the only thing. This is Stephen Yen, executive chef, director of food and beverage at Liberty National Country Club. He creates the Pan-Asian-inspired menus like overseas dim sum, wok, sushi, pastry, hotline kitchens. He's responsible for hiring and training and coaching 80-plus BOH members. 35 million in annual revenue, food, and labor costs always kept below that projected budget. P&L review, banquets designed, executed, ranging from 50 to 700 guests. Designed a program to feed 1,200 hungry New Yorkers each week with City Harvest. You don't just do a little bit. You do everything.
I do. And I think it has to come down to, you know, the modern day chef is now an educated chef, meaning undergrad. I went to Boston College. So it's more of coming into the cooking world with a business mindset. Is the cooking, I'll tell anyone, is the easiest part about the business. The hardest part about the business is the people side, maintaining relationships inside and outside of your kitchen, making sure that your staff is where they need to be. Everyone who's working in the kitchen, everyone has their issues outside of work. You know, being able to motivate, keep your staff motivated, keep them happy, keep them learning is one of the hardest parts of the job. Obviously, staffing across the world, everyone's going to keep complaining. Nobody wants to work. Every generation thinks the next generation, you know, is the end of the world. And it really is finding the people that really want to absorb what you're ready to teach them, having them preach for you to go find more people, whether it's their cousins or their former coworkers, bringing them in and just showing, hey, you know, we're doing some really cool stuff here. You don't need to go work at Nobu. You can do the same style cuisine at a golf club. But then be able to be home before 9:30, 10 p.m. You know, you're not coming home at 1 a.m.
All right.
So I think that's a huge part. Having the business mindset to it really helps because at the end of the day, we are a for-profit business. You know, we're not a non-for-profit.
Right. But you designed the program to feed the 1,200 New Yorkers each week with City Harvest. How did that come about?
So that came about actually during COVID at my previous job. There was only two restaurants that fed people during City Harvest. It was Le Bernardin, and the restaurant I ran was called Tao, and the location I ran was Tao Downtown. It was the third largest, most profitable grossing restaurant in the country at one time, and then obviously COVID happened. So people needed, in New York City, people who needed to be fed were going through different programs. City Harvest just has to be one of them. God's Love We Deliver is another. The food bank is another one. And so at Tao, it allowed us to bring back more of our people because now I had work for them to do. And we got donations from like Snap Pack. They would donate a lot of the to-go stuff and they would drop off just pallets and pallets of produce. We would purchase the proteins and then we would combine these, you know, put the meals together. And then over the course of 3 days, they would come pick up the meals. And it was really helpful for everyone involved. Like I said, it got a lot of the guys that I had just, you know, sitting at home. No one was, especially in the cooking field, you're not used to just sitting around. Like even when you eat your meals, you're eating it standing up over a garbage can for the most part. So a lot of these guys were just antsy and just wanted to get back into the kitchen.
Yeah.
So we got them back in. We're sorting the produce they're giving us because they don't, obviously they're not going to sort. They're just going to pick up the bees. So, like, you have grade A's, grade B's, potatoes. The B's are getting dropped off. We have to sort through it. We have to then, you know, wash it, process it, put it together, meal plan it, get it cooled, chilled down so we're not getting anyone sick, and then getting it packed, labeled, dated, you know, with everything, all the ingredients in there. And then City Harvest would actually come back and pick them up and then distribute to the various, you know, it could have been a church distribution site. It could have been a government distribution site. But it was... We at first, we initially had enough money for just about 7 weeks. We said, hey, this is something worthwhile. But then we started raising more money and more money and more money. We ended up turning it into an almost 6-month project where it was extremely rewarding for everyone involved. And I mean, City Harvest is still continually one of the best, I would say, one of the best food banks and one of the best resources to feed New Yorkers. As you know, New York is very, very populated, and nowhere in New York City can you actually afford to live there, right? It's a very, 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 very expensive, expensive city. And a lot of the people left during COVID, you know, and the ones that really stuck it out, we wanted to be able to be there and help them. And even this year, we're going to participate in the City Harvest Golf and Tennis Charity Classic, which raises money to continue on what they're doing. And I think potentially in the next couple of years, we're looking to partner with them and host that tournament at Liberty National. So we also want to be able to give back. And our ownership, the Fireman family, they just did an ACE Cup grant for the AJGA. They're giving $12 million to the AJGA because they really believe in golf, and they really believe where golf, you know, where it needs to keep going. It's, nobody wants to see this divide. Nobody wants to see the disruption really disrupt the game of golf and what we love about golf. So I think it's really important that we all do our part and make sure that it keeps going in the right direction.
Wow, that is so cool. I mean, that to me, I'm one of those people, get your kids into the game because it's a game that lasts a lifetime. But beyond that, it teaches children so many good habits and good relationship building skills. And it's not just a game. It's relationships that you develop. And it teaches you to be a friend, how to be a friend, you know, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful sport. Gets you outside, and you don't have to be super athletic, you know, for kids that don't want to go banging into each other under a basketball hoop or a football, getting, you know, pulled down. My son played defense because he said, I want to be the one tackling. I don't want to be tackled. So it's just a real, real good sport. Now, Let's go back. You just got back from the Las Vegas, or a couple of weeks ago, maybe, the TPC Food and Beverage Conference. Did you get any golf in when you were there?
We did. We played a round at TPC Summerlin. It was around 50 degrees, so we were wearing vests and hoodies, but the sun did come out, and it was a lot of fun. I ended up playing with the chef from TPC Sawgrass, the chef from TPC Boston, and the chef from TPC Scottsdale. So, you know, making those relationships is always, always important, you know, from so many levels. But then also, by the end of it, it's like, hey, I have, you know, I'm Liberty National. We're hosting the Mizuho LPGA America's Open May 16th and 19th. I have at least five of those chefs that are like saying, hey, you need help, we're getting on a plane, we're coming to help you.
Wow.
Vice versa. Like, I did the players, I helped the players last year. I'm going back down this year, and it's the 50th anniversary for the Players' Championship. You know, it's the Super Bowl of golf. It's incredible, and it's something where we're cooking. We're arriving on site at, like, 5 a.m. We're cooking from 5 a.m. to about 7 p.m. every single day for, like, 10 days straight, because you got to remember, we start before the actual tournament starts. But it's something where the caliber of chefs is such at a high level, and it's a pleasure, and it's humbling, and everything about it, it just inspires you to keep driving hard every single day. And I think developing this relationship with the TPC guys is something that I've always dreamt about. Like, you know, when I really combined my love of food and golf, I was like, I got to figure out how to take the show on the road and just, you know, travel with the tour and keep cooking. And it's kind of one of those things where if you keep thinking about it and keep thinking about it, it's going to happen. And it really has happened. So, yeah, we played a fun way. The fun thing was, we're like, hey, you know what? Let's do a scramble format. None of us has picked up clubs in a couple months, and we're all chefs. We're not professional golfers. So we played a scramble, and, you know, we ended up doing really, really well. But, you know, that conference was so important for us, because now the PGA Tour hired a nutritionist. For the first time, they actually have an on-staff nutritionist, because the players are saying, hey, we don't want Snickers bars. We don't want Doritos. Like, yes, that's delicious, but what we put into our body is fuel, and we're performing at the highest level, and we want to keep pushing. So we were able to go check out the UFC training facility in Vegas and talk to their dietitians and talk to their chefs about how they feed the fighters, because now this is, you know, this has become the focus where even when we did the LPGA Mizuho tournament for the first time last year, when I did the menu, I was really fortunate. Our head teaching professional, Jorge Parada, he coaches about five LPGA players. So picking his brain on what the players wanted to eat was so helpful, where we had zero pushback when we needed the menu to get approved. And Michelle Wee, the host of the tournament, came up to me personally and said that was the best food any of these players have ever seen. Wow. And she had to tell the younger players that don't get used to this guy. It's not always going to be like this. But, you know, really focusing on what goes into the players' bodies is helpful, because at the same time, I'm guilty. I'm not always eating healthy. You know, I'm the last guy. I think a lot of chefs are the last people that are going to be eating healthy. But now, if we're cooking healthy or making it delicious, we're going to be ultimately eating that way ourselves. So I think it's a good change for the entire ecosystem of golf and food.
Far out. That's so cool. You're teaching us so much. You're going to have to help me with pronouncing Aspetuck Valley Country Club.
Yes.
What's
randomly through a produce vendor I've been meeting other country club chefs. And so Aspetuck Valley Country Club is in Connecticut. It's not too far. It's right by, like, let's say New Canaan. So about an hour from the city. One of the produce vendors said, hey, the chef up there, he's been up there for 25 years. He wants help designing a Korean barbecue table. And I said, sure, give me his number. So we ended up being on the phone for like an hour, just, you know, talking about food, talking about golf. He's a golfer. I'm a golfer. You know, he's a chef. I'm a chef. It was as if we were like long lost best friends. And we never even met in real life. And then he said, hey, come up here and play golf. I was like, listen, the season's really busy for me. I'm not going to get up there. And obviously he was like, hey, I want to come play Liberty. So I said, please come down and play Liberty. So that was the first time we met in person. But even that day, really didn't get to spend a lot of time with him. And then he invited me to go up and do a collaboration dinner with him at Aspetuck. And it was a lot of fun. We did a Japanese-style tasting menu, chef's choice, where he did two dishes, I did two dishes, but we also demoed one dish each first. And he, where he is, that club is a very, very, very community-based club, meaning you're going to see your members 4 to 5 times a week, where at my club, we're going to see them once, maybe twice max per week, because a lot of the guys are coming from the city, but everyone in that area lives within 2 miles of the club. So they're in there popping in at least, you know, breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Sure.
Also, they have pickleball, they have tennis, they have a pool. You know, they have a lot more amenities than we have. So it's that more community feel. So a lot of the members loved the demonstrations because, I mean, as you know, during COVID, if you didn't cook, you started to cook because you had nothing else to do. So a lot of them really had a lot of questions. And so I did a miso glaze Chilean sea bass with jasmine rice and haricot verts. He did some sushi. And what else did he do? And he did like a couple vinaigrettes. So it was more, we did the demos, but I think that Q&A session, it was just an open forum where a lot of the membership up there said, okay, I'm looking for a knife. What direction should I go for? And so it was fun to, you know, it's very easy for us to say, oh, go to this store, get this brand. But that doesn't really mean, like, if I say, hey, go to Golf Galaxy, pick up a Titleist driver, that doesn't mean anything. So we were talking to them why the knife was made for that specific task they wanted to do. And I think they really enjoyed that. And they really, really took that to a whole, we both took it to a whole new level because we were just going on and, you know, teaching them how soy sauce was first discovered and how to make miso. And it's a lot of stuff that no one's going to even think about telling you. And it's just, for us, it's just random knowledge that we have. But I think collaborative dinners between restaurant chefs happen all the time. Collaborative dinners between country club chefs happen, you know, they're once off. You do a wine dinner, you invite someone in, but mostly you invite someone in from like a local restaurant. So I think it was fun to have another club and, you know, two clubs being put together. Because then you really have the clientele is pretty much the same, you know, and you're able to talk the talk, walk the walk, and it's a lot more fun for the membership.
Stephen Yen, Executive Chef, Director of Food and Beverage, Liberty National Country Club. You are a pleasure to talk with. Thank you so much for for spending time with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that we've met, and I look forward to talking with you again. Aloha.
Aloha.
We're going to come back, and we're going to go now to get some lessons in cardio golf, cardiogolf.com, cardio golf TV creator, LPGA master teaching professional, Karen Palacios Jensen is with us next. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
I'm Paul Morikawa, 2020 PGA champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghaus, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
The Aloha Power Equipment Superstore is next to the Costco gas station in Eveleigh. Riding mowers, robotic mowers, weed whackers, blowers, chainsaws, and generators. We got it all. Specials throughout the store. We stock parts and accessories for everything we sell. Honda, Maruyama, Steel, Echo, Billy Goat, and a lounge for while you wait repairs. Our Waipahu store is still open. We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment Superstore.
Do you want more consistency and more distance in your golf swing? Schedule a session with Coach Claude Brusseau, PGA Master and Director of Player Development at the Wailea Golf Academy. It's the only Golf Channel Academy in Hawaii. He's ranked number one teacher in Hawaii by Golf Digest since 2019 and two-time ASPGA Teacher of the Year. Claude will simplify your game and make you better. Scratch golfer or just beginning? Call Claude at 808-856-9458 or book with him at WaileaGolf.com. That's 808-856-9458. Have more fun and stop paying for lunches.
Hey, congratulations, Jeff and Kapolē. You're going to go to Kauai and play at Poipu Bay. That is so awesome. Congratulations and thanks for listening to the show. Hey, it is Aloha Powers Honda EU 2200 generator sale. Normally $1,249. It's just $1,049, including an extended 2-year warranty that's worth $250. That's a $450 savings. The best price in town. We've got mowers and blowers and whackers and chainsaws. You want it? Aloha Power's got it. So get your Honda EU 2200 generator. Take advantage of this sale. It's going on now. Aloha Power Equipment, Eveleigh, next to the Costco gas station, and in Waipahu. We put power at your fingertips and tell them Danielle sent you. KORL, YNI, Honolulu.
Man, I thought that was in the cup. It bounced out. I've been robbed. Now, back to the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
Karen Palacios Jensen, cardiogolf.com, cardio golf TV creator, LPGA master teaching professional, lead instructor for Golf Channel, Golf Digest top 50 best golf fitness trainers, the only LPGA professional on that list. Welcome into the clubhouse, Karen.
Thanks for having me, and I'm actually talking to you from the golf course. We have a couple of minutes in between holes here.
You're so wonderful. Where are you playing?
Remember, we're in North Carolina, and the weather is actually pretty good here this week. We've had 60-degree weather, so whenever we drop whatever we do, are doing, and we go play golf when it's that kind of weather and February.
I totally understand. Get out and go have some fun. So it's interesting because you were talking to me about something you wanted to address, and that is mixing it up. Right?
Right. It's something called seasonal training. And most athletes that perform and are in competition do some sort of seasonal training. But even if you're not an athlete and you're working on your golf and your fitness, you want to kind of mix it up. And even if you live in warm places like you guys do in Hawaii, you don't always want to be doing the same workouts, practicing the same thing all the time. You want to mix it up and work on your weaknesses. And, you know, you might have some, you guys probably even have a little bit of an off season where you're not maybe doing competition. So that might be the time that you pump up your workouts and get a little stronger. So, yes, you doesn't matter if you're an athlete or not. You want to do some sort of seasonal training.
Seasonal training. So if I'm always going out and running, just running, and that's what I do. I just go out and jog, or I just go out and run. What should I be doing other than that?
Yeah, right. So you want to think of your season in three phases. We have the off season, and that's when you probably have you know, for us folks that have winter, that's when we're inside more, so we might have a little bit more time. Preseason is right before you're going to start your competition or you're going to play more golf, and then in season. So when you're on off season, that's when you really should be working on getting stronger, working on your core strength, doing other things, cross training, other things than what your sport is. Preseason, that's when you start to focus more on your weaknesses and try to get stronger. And then in season, it's all about maintenance, mobility, making sure that you're not going to injure yourself, and recovery after playing a lot. So let's just say we're golfers playing a lot of golf. You know, you want to do stretches afterwards so that you recover faster to play the next day.
That would be recovery mode, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay. And so, how do you work on your mobility when you're in season?
Right, so tubing is great. I have something called the Power Swing Trainer, and it's a tube, and you can do a lot of shoulder upper mobility exercises. It hooks to the door, so you can simulate your golf swing and do some stretching. So it's light tubing, so you're doing a little bit of strength, but a lot of mobility. Off-season, that's when you want to try to get a little bit stronger. If you've never done any fitness before, that might be the time to get with a trainer and say, hey, I want to get a little stronger this off season. And they'll put you on a program with resistance, you know, beginners probably tubing. And then as you get stronger, you'll get some weights, get a little stronger for your season.
What's a good weight to start at? I mean, the weight of the weight?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So it's going to depend on your fitness level, but there is a way to test. So let's just say a bicep curl. So you grab 8-pound weights, and then you do an 8-repetition test. And the last couple repetitions, like 6, 7, 8, should be slightly challenging for you, and that's a good amount of weight for you. If 8 pounds is light and you can do curls all day, it's not really going to do much to you. If you've got 15-pound curls and you can't even do like 2 without like heaving, that's too much for you. So you want to be challenged those last couple repetitions. So that's a good way to start.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, I probably would pick up a 6-pound. And if I can go with a 6-pound through 8 repetitions without, you know, my elbow stretching out.
Good form.
Yes.
Right. Good form. And then those last couple ones where you kind of have to work at it, that means that your muscles are breaking down and you're actually, you know, building up some strength.
See, that's their muscles breaking down means you're building up strength. Mm-hmm. See, that's backwards.
Right.
And for people, it seems like you're hurting yourself, but you're not really, right?
No, you're kind of, what you're doing is you're just stressing the muscles out. So when the muscles stress out, then you produce hormones that are going to help repair. And then that's when you build up your muscle.
Yeah. Does that work with like doing push-ups or sit-ups?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All that. You know, any kind of resistance training is great. And, you know, as we get older, we tend to lose muscle. So you have to work a little bit harder on keeping that muscle that you have. So it might, you know, you're not building up, pumping, getting like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You're just maintaining the muscle that you already have.
Okay, that's good. I don't want to be all muscles.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what about cross training? What does that mean?
Yeah, cross training is doing other activities other than the sport that you do. So let's just say you're a runner. Cross-training would entail doing some exercises where you're going more side to side, laterally, maybe even a raising up and down. So you would want to do some exercises where you're in the frontal plane, and that's when your leg is moving out to the side, because when you're running, you're always going kind of forward and backwards.
Yeah.
Rotation would be, a form of cross-training. So a lot of mobility yoga would be a cross-training thing for runners. Doing a little bit of bicycle would be cross-training, a little maybe dance aerobics where you're moving side to side and not just forward and backwards.
This is wonderful. So this is Karen Palacios Jensen. CardioGolf.com is where you find her. Cardio Golf and Cardio Golf TV creator, LPGA master teaching professional. And you were talking about the power swing trainer. Do we go to CardioGolf.com to get that?
Yeah, absolutely. CardioGolf.com. And it's a great tool to warm up. I have all the videos on my platform, Danielle. And my program, Cardio Golf, follows a seasonal training. So if you go and sign up, you can sign up for free. And we're in the off season right now. My workouts are going to be more stability, posture. We're working on working on our body. In the springtime, we're going to do more golf swing drill exercises. And in the summer, we do a lot of maintenance where I have videos so you can do mobility after you play golf.
Wow.
So my platform is all geared towards golfers. But even if you're not an athlete, not a golfer, you my programs are functional fitness. So you can learn to play golf on my platform if you've never played golf, too.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is cardiogolf.com. That's where you go. Cardio,
right.
C-A-R-D-I-O, golf, G-O-L-F.com. And in the preseason, you were talking about your weaknesses. How do I determine my weaknesses?
Well, so let's just say for golfers, if you hate to get out of the bunker, if you hate bunkers, that's one of your weaknesses.
So you need to
either take a lesson how to get out of the bunker or watch some of my tips on cardiogolf.com of how to get out of the bunker, and that would be your weakness, and that's one of the things that you want to practice to get better at. To just think about it, like you might not get into the bunker every hole, but that one hole you do, it takes you 3 to 4 to get out, and it might ruin your whole score just from one shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let me see now. To get stronger, so there, I'm going to determine my weaknesses in the golf game by, what I'm not good at. At cardiogolf.com with Karen Palacios Jensen at the wheel, she can help you figure these things out. You know what they are, but then she'll help you figure out how to get rid of that weakness. About strength, what kind of strength training do you recommend?
So golfers need functional strength training. So we need to do exercises where we're pushing away from our body, where we're pulling towards our body, raising up and down. Think about it. You're squatting a lot in golf. You're picking up your ball.
Sure.
You're getting in and out of bunkers. And, of course, rotation. So those are basically the functional movements that we should be getting good at. Functional movements are movements that we do in everyday life. But a lot of the times we don't take our bodies through full range of motion, so we need to go actively seek those exercises. Think about it. If you're desk bound all week, you're sitting in a desk, you're not doing much rotation, then all of a sudden on the weekend, you want to go and be a good golfer, and now all you're doing is rotation. So you need to seek out some rotational exercises throughout the week, so when you do get to go play, those movements will be easier for you.
Awesome. Awesome. Are you rolling along to your next hole?
Yeah, we're good. I'm actually playing with Scott McCarron. He's our neighbor. He plays on the Champions Tour.
He was
out in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago. And we're playing a little game, so I'm just taking a break from one hole. My husband is keeping the team going.
As long as we're not messing up the team, we're just...
Yeah. Scott's killing us.
Scott's killing you? Well, something about those professional golfers, when you play against them, they tend to win.
Right.
Yeah, this is so much fun. What kind of game are you playing?
So we just play like front back overall, best ball. So myself and my husband against Scott and our neighbor, Dan Hughes. So we just have a little game going. Scott gives us some shots. So, you know, it's a little bit competitive. But, you know, and we love it when we beat him a hole, but it's hard.
Well, Karen Palacios Jensen is an LPGA master teaching professional, lead instructor for Golf Channel and Golf Digest Top 50 Best Golf Fitness Trainer. You spend some time on the golf course, don't you?
Yes.
So I'm just thrilled that you're having a great time, and I'm thrilled that you took time out to be with us inside the clubhouse. You are awesome. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, and I love to come back at any time, tell you more about whatever season we're in, and we'll do some more fitness.
That's great, and I'm so glad. You said, yes, I'll be there, and here you are playing golf. Thank you, and say hi to the gang, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon. Aloha. I want to give you some tee times. You might be inspired to get out there and play. It is a little chilly up Volcano Golf Club. It's, started the morning about 53 degrees. Maybe it's warmed up to 54. There is an 840 and a 916, and the Sunrise Boys, they're at it. They may be finished already. Makalei has a 9 o'clock and a 10:10. We've also got Think Energy. Now, that's a positive way to go about, you know, Think Energy. They're playing today. May you all hit the sweet spot every time. There's an 850 at Poipu, a 930, and an 1120. Kauai Lagoons has a 1030 if you'd like to get out there. Hawaii Kai has a 1210. Turtle Bay, 846, 906, 11 o'clock. Raw Hawaiian Country Club, 848. 10:28, 11:30. Eva Beach Golf Course has an 8:30 and a 10:06. We're just rolling here. Wailea has an 11:30, 11:40, a 12:20. And Emerald Course Wailea Gold Course. Did I make a mistake here? The Emerald Course has a 9:50, a 10:30, and an 11:20. And we've got over at Maui Nui a 12:56. Over at Wailea, the Toyama guys and Honda guys, they're out playing, so may you all hit the sweet spot every time. And the Dunes at Maui Lani has a 2:28 and a 2:46. Maui Lani is a whole lot of fun to play. I just want to say one more time, because I really like these guys. It's Aloha Power's Honda EU 2200 generator sale. It is the best price in town, and they've got product. Normally $12.49, it's just $10.49, okay? And then you throw in the extended warranty. It's a 2-year warranty worth $250. That's $450 savings. The best price in town, and they have stock. We've got mowers and blowers and whackers and chainsaws, and you know, you want it, Aloha Power's got it. And so come and get yours today. Aloha Power Equipment, Evile, next to the Costco gas station and in Waipahu. We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment. Reminder, you know, there is a high surf warning for the north and east facing shores, Niihau, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and Maui. You want to make sure that you take care of yourself today and don't do anything that could potentially jeopardize your health, because it's going to be very, very windy. So if you put yourself in precarious positions, it may be very difficult for people to come and rescue you. And I'm talking about some, you know, my friends are hikers, and they get out there and they get themselves in trouble. So don't do that. You know, try to stay close to home. It's cold anyway, right? So bundle up and catch up on the latest program that you want to catch up on. And I am missing my clothes so that I can thank all of the people who make this show possible. And I'm feeling awful about it right now as I thumb through all of my paperwork trying to find our clothes today. Nani, you don't have that over there, do you?
No.
On the back piece of paper. Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody who makes this show possible. You are wonderful, and I appreciate all the time that you've given us. And I will have to close the show now because we've just about run out of time as I try to find that piece of paper. We'll take care of you twice next week. Thank you for your mama, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2024.